broadcasting live from somewhere in the desert, posting up truth like a stamp in the corner of a letter. It's Leander Grace, that loud. Amid lies, we seek truth. Amid truth, we awaken. And once awakened, we speak truth everywhere. Now we're opening night and powering to reveal what's been hidden in plain sight. It's time for Leander Grace Out Loud, because your silence will not protect you. Oh, Shabbat Shalom and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, folks around the globe. Morning to some, afternoon to others, but a hearty hello nonetheless to la-di-da-di and every other body. Pardon me, I had to swallow a little bit there. Ooh, got a little choky. Tonight we bring you some scriptures and scuttlebutts here on Holistic Truth, live on Blog Talk Radio, part of the Natsarim Network. It is June 2th. That's the second day of the sixth month, as we know it, June 2th, 2023, and we are broadcasting live from the High Mountain Desert. I am your host, Leander Grace. Ooh, and it has been a day, has it not? It is a very exciting time to be alive and aware and awake and about the business of the one thing, diligently contending for the faith, asking Holy Spirit to continue to guide our battle, knowing we are given only our daily bread and a daily reprieve based upon our spiritual fitness, going forward with the full armor of Yahweh Elohim, knowing the battle is won, but we must show up, and we got lots and lots of stuff to learn. Holy Spirit stands waiting to be invited as this great awakening continues to accelerate across the face of the earth. Oh my goodness, and change is upon us. We're going to see real big signs of that here a little bit on the world stage, and I think we know some of the things that might be coming. We might know, we might not know, but I think some things are going to blow our minds. Maybe even those of us who are watching, we might have our minds blown a little bit, because change is upon us. Within every dimension and layer of change is we the species, and we the people can conceive, and on levels and dimensions we cannot yet imagine. Not all who are gifted are in and of the light. We're going to talk about that this evening, especially not all who are gifted are in and of the light. You say, Leander Grace, if they're not working for God, who's given the gifts? Well, God shines on everybody. Those who have gifts have choices. Those who have gifts have choices. It's not necessarily a gift based on a choice, although once Holy Spirit has been invited, the gifts do come. Over a period of time. But I do want to warn you guys, more than ever now, the harlot is in the house and the thief is at the door. The harlot has made herself at home on the Protestant couch. Isn't that something? And the thief is at the door, knocking, 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 wanting to come in, join the party. It is time to come away from the tent. So make no mistake, do not be deceived. We are not just in battle, we're at war. We're at spiritual war in a very deep way, and there are a lot of spiritual soldiers and warriors out there on the world stage, or not even out there behind the scenes, doing what it is that they do as spiritual warriors. That's praying, making a difference, transmuting the negative and all of that, and I want to talk about that for just a minute. Before we get too far along into the program today, you know, there's a headline. So I woke up this morning feeling just fine, and then there was a shift in my feelingness, right? You know how you wake up, you feel good, and then it's like, what just happened? It was almost like a slam of mood swing. And I don't know if any other highly sensitives or empaths felt the same thing, but I was agitated nearly all day long, and it wasn't because I didn't eat, because I did lots of carbs. I mean, I had grounding meals, so it wasn't that, and it wasn't some of the other things that we might think, and there was no reason for me to feel as agitated as I did. And lo and behold, and a lot of challenges came my way today as well. You know, I had to get something done, and it seemed that everything, the whole cosmos was against me achieving that goal. Was that the case? No, but it seemed that way because I was anxious to fulfill something, and I didn't get to do it, and I was anxious and just kind of on edge all day anyway, and I didn't know why, and I want to share this with you. When I came back from my little errands and taking care of the responsibilities that I had for the today, I came back and I started looking through some of the headlines on some different things, and I found out, lo and behold, and this is from OAN, that there was a train crash in India, and there's, you know, over 207 people so far, the count is 27, have lost their lives, and 900 are injured, and that's going to take a lot to manage. That is a horrific accident. And so, you know, that might be why folks, I felt a little bit better once I saw that, and I thought, well, that might be an energetic cause. That's a lot of mayhem there. And if it's magnified by mourners and the anxiety of those around, and if it's being magnified across their continent on the news like our news does, well, then, yeah, that would explain the agitation that we might have all felt. Put that in coupled with all of these solar flares that we've seen and the coronal mass ejections and the high photon count and all the yummy, yummy stuff that gets us all excited. It was a challenging day to get through. And you know, I had an interaction with someone, a professional individual. And I said, are you having a good day? And she said, well, yes, I am. I said, I am so glad. She goes, you? I said, no, my day has been really, really awful, but I'm looking forward to accomplishing this so that it can end on a good note. And that began the healing of the emotional tag or tag-along or hanging thingy that I felt because of the disturbance in the force. So I just wanted to share that with you all, that if we draw attention to it and are grateful for what's going on anyway, regardless of the way we feel, because we don't know why we always feel the way we feel. As an empath, I assure you that is the case. Many of the others out there are going to tell you the same thing. We don't know who felt it first sometimes. And all of that anxiousness and anxiety and that the hesitancy of thought that goes along with a shocked population can actually reverberate, and those who are empathic know that I'm telling the truth on this, and it can have an affect and an effect on us. And if we're not well trained and able to keep, let me go ahead and open up the chat room, I hadn't done that yet. If we're not well trained, you know, and disciplined in our gift, then sometimes things can get a little wayward. I apologize to you folks not opening the chat room sooner for those of you who want to get in and chat amongst yourselves. So let me go ahead and do that now. So there you have that. The chat room is now open here for you guys who want to join in and talk amongst yourself. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on lately, a lot of things jolting, stuff like that. So what I'm going to suggest to the listeners, and that is stay hydrated, get lots of rest. Yeah, I know it sounds like basic stuff, and it is basic stuff. You know, if we focus on self-care, not selfishly, but self-firstly, so we can be prepared to help others, you know, then we'll be halfway there to writing our emotional readjustment or emotional adjustment for that little shock that went on today. That affected, I think it probably that large, I think it probably affected everybody, a large group of folks. So there you have that. So remember, too, as you listen to the broadcast or the podcast, pod people, we love you, too. Question everything, cultivating a Berean mind and a seeker's heart. And, yes, we have a scripture for that every Friday night, Acts 17:11. These were more noble than those in Thessalonica in that they received the word with all readiness of mind and searched the scriptures daily to see whether these things were so. And we could drink. I want to tell you guys, this is going to be a ride tonight. We're going to talk about some stuff. The points that we're going to make and the topic that we're going to tackle is one that is of great controversy among the different denominations of churches in the Protestant world. It just is. It just is. There's a lot of controversy. It's a lot to wrap your head around, the things that we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about, with the continuing of the who's who, it continues with Genesis 6 we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about Enoch 6. We're going to talk about the Anunnaki. We're going to talk about some of the Sumerian tablets. We're going to talk about a little bit of Jubilees, although I won't be quoting its chapter and verse. I will be bringing that into the conversation this evening, and I want to put some pointers on this who's who, because it's not necessarily so that these three terms, Anunnaki, Nephilim, and Watchers, are necessarily interchangeable, because the watchers, not all of the watchers fell. Not all of the angels, the sons of God, who were set in place to watch over mankind, not all of them fell. Only the ones who wanted to rebel against God and make their own little kingdom, have their own little stuff, are the ones that fell. And they concocted a scheme, we'll find out, in Genesis 6 and in Enoch as well, and also in Jubilees and also in the book of Joshua. We find out all of these things. When we put them all together, we have a better, a more colorful picture. Actually has all of the details, a lot more details into the picture than the integrated messaging system that we call the Holy Scriptures. And it is the Holy Scriptures. It is the infallible Word of God written outside of this time domain, written outside of our realm, and brought to us inside to our realm. We have to understand that. And if there are errors, it's our translation, which is why those original documents are so very important. Very important. And since we know that there is a checksum and a self-correcting and an error detection built into the integrated message system of the six books that we call the Old Testament and the New Testament, the Holy Scriptures, the Bible, the canonized stuff, we don't have all of them, we know that. If it doesn't meet the code, then we can question it. Then we can question it. But if it meets the code and it fits in and it actually elaborates on a topic, then maybe we should look into that. Because with 40,000 different denominations, we're confused. We need more information. We need more information. So in Genesis 6, let's go ahead and get that. I do need to go ahead and clear my throat. Just a minute, let me mute the mic. In Genesis 6:1, we're going to talk about what the canonized versions say when we get there. Well, actually, you know what? Let's go ahead and go to Genesis 6 for those who want to follow me along in the scriptures. Genesis 6, and I do read from the King James Version. It is preferred. I like the way it flows. I mean, what do you say? So in Genesis 6:1, it says, "And it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them." So this is a period of time. And it came to pass means this is over a period of time. So the watchers were already there. The sons of God were already there, overseeing, assisting. Our technology, we were more technologically advanced than what the scriptures led on. It's not a hidden thing. It's just not something that it's necessarily mentioning right now. "And it came to pass when we began to multiply that the sons of God, the B'nai Elohim, sons of the Elohim, the daughters of the human, saw the daughters of the human that they were good," right? "The daughters of men that they were fair, and they took them wives of which they chose." Now, this was the beginning, as far as we can tell, when we step back into the throes of history. This is the beginning of what we call the king's choice, or the king's choice. The king can have whoever he wants. And we see that also reflected in the book of Esther, when there was the roundup rodeo of all of the young virgins to replace Vashti, who wasn't going to be, you know, dangled in front of folks. And Genesis 6:3 says, "And the Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years." Now, why is it that God said those days are going to become, says is also, actually it is become, all right? It's going to become, it's going to dwindle on down to 120 years. And then it says there were giants in the earth, and that doesn't explain why, other than there's also flesh. Well, let's take a look at this. We know all of the lineage up until Noah. Now, we're talking about before the flood, right up until now. We haven't had a flood yet. We know that the lineage of Noah spells out the whole plan of God. But we also know that the lineage became corrupt. We also know that the lineage lived more than 120 years. We know that the lineage from Adam down lived nearly a millennia. And they did a lot of destruction in that 1,000 years before the flood. Or it was more than 1,000, but it would do the math. But there were a lot of destruction was wreaked. A lot of destruction upon mankind. They self-destructed there were genetic, well, let's get to that. It says in the Lord, that's why he said there were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, we're going to talk about, and the also after that, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men, which were of old men of renown. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Now, we think we can imagine that. I don't think that we can imagine that. Are we there right now? We're getting very, very close. And it repented. It got, you know, Yahweh Elohim is regretting. He's repenting that he made man on the earth because he's just self-destructing. And the angels, these fallen angels came in and taught them stuff. So let's get here because we're about to get to the flood. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I've created off the face of the earth, both all that. There you have it. But Noah found grace in the eyes of Yahweh Elohim. Noah found grace in the eyes of God, in the eyes of the Lord. Now, up until this time, we haven't had a big delineation of the who's who. This is an integrated messaging system. This doesn't necessarily kick out anything else that's ever been documented. Because if we want to know anything about there were giants in the earth in those days, we have to take a look at it. And in the concordant literal version, it says that it's the distinguished ones. Now, that doesn't translate from what I see to the Hebrew. So I don't think that that's necessarily correct. Oh, it says, yeah, the ones distinguished. They were the Nephilim. This is Hebrews, Strong's Hebrews 5303. Nephilim, or from the Popoli, a feller, a belly, or tyrant. Now, I want us to take a look at this word feller because the odd fellers, we're going to have to take a look at that at some point. But the King James Version renders it as giant. It also can be rendered as earthborn. Now, I don't see that connection, but it has been said that it can be rendered earthborn. I haven't seen that. I haven't come across that. So I want to put that out there and let you know that. So what the other books, what Joshua and Jubilees and Enoch all say is that the angels wanted to go against God and set up their kingdom on earth, but they don't have the DNA. They don't have the ability to procreate. God didn't make them that way. So they had to come up with some stuff to do. Enter the fallen ones, those from who heaven fell. Enter Anunnaki. Now, the Anunnaki have a creation myth that pretty closely mirrors that of Adam and Eve and what we see in Genesis and all of that stuff in the book of Moses. What it does is take credit for them as if they are the ones that did it. So they're completely cutting God out of the picture and saying, no, we did this. We did this. And they infected the bloodlines. Let me get a drink. By the time we get to Genesis 6 with all these generations, they started infecting the bloodlines. And what we say here, God says all flesh had become corrupt. This is God looked. This is Genesis 6 and 12. Now it says, and God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said to Noah, in the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence to them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Now, it seems cruel that God would destroy his creation, but as pointed out by our brother Rob Skiba before, he was, you know, too soon taken from us, and we'll see him again. You know, when we meet again, we'll be able to go over some of these finer points. He does have a lot of material left on YouTube and on the internet still, so feel free to look up his things because he taught me just a little bit. I'm very impressed with the work that he did. So it says, and God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is coming before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. And then he tells them to make the ark. All right, make the ark of gopher wood. Boom, ba boom, ba boom. When we get to the Anunnaki tale, and when they start taking credit, you know, because in their tale they say that they started intermingling with mankind. Now, how did they do that? How did they do that? Well, what according to the tablets, they used genetic experiments, kind of like test tube babies, as it were. And their first ones, though, was not with with mankind. They didn't first crossbreed. Their first creation was not with mankind. Their first creation was with a lower ape animal. And it didn't turn out very well, but they worked really well as slaves in the mines. And they needed the mines to then get the gold. You say, well, why do they need gold? Well, mono-orderly rearranged elements. Monoatomic orderly rearranged elements. Orme. They needed that because they were not able to sustain themselves since the glory of God had gone from them. And they needed to find a way. Well, they knew all the magics, all of this and all of that, so they made Ormus. And they didn't want to do the work. Part of what they wrote in the book, in their tablets, may be true, may not be true, but they created a slave race. And that slave race, I believe, is what we call the Agigi. Now, when they crossbred with humans, what they finally decided is the only way to get the divine spark is if they steal humans. So they did. And they crossbred with that. But the Anunnaki didn't want to carry the offspring, so then they started in making them in the test tubes, and that's why the Anunnaki say that they were made in clay jars. It wasn't clay jars, maybe earthen jars. That's not what it was. Glass is sand that is heated until it's clear. It's also part of the earth. It's also soil. So we have the simplest parts of this. Why? So that when the simpler folks were reading it, they could understand it as well. We can't understand all the mysteries unless we actually go in and look for them and have Holy Spirit explain it. So let's go back to the Anunnaki. So the Anunnaki, those are the ones that we see that were crossbred with the humans. They were giants in the earth in those days and even after that. And they crossbred lions. You see the lion men of Moab. They really existed. Those aren't fables. Those are things that were created by the Anunnaki and the crossbreeding of those who from the heavens fell. There were Nephilim in the land in those days and even afterwards. So how did God get rid of them the first time? Well, the first time, he sent a flood. And it was, as Rob Skiba had put it, it was an act of kindness and love for his creation. Because it gave us, mankind, a fighting chance genetically. The odds were in our favor. The eight that were saved in the ark, not Gilgamesh. The eight that were saved in the ark, not Gilgamesh, not nine. The eight that went in the ark had a bloodline that was reasonable. Noah found favor. He was perfect in his generation. And then you had Shem, Ham, and Japheth and grabbed wives, right? He had a wife. And so were the genetics mixed on the ark a little bit because we come up with Ham who wasn't doing real good. And when he came off the ark, there was Ham. Now, one thing that we realize with the Anunnaki is when they were breeding, what was very important, you'll see this in the stories of Nimrod as well and beyond, and I think that's why the Holy Scriptures as well as the book of Joshua point to the half-sister relationship between Sarah and Abraham. What was important? They had two separate mothers, the same father. Why is this important? Because it is the mitochondrial DNA that's passed down maternally. And it was the interbreeding of the mitochondrial DNA that God did not want to have happen, but it was the interbreeding of the mitochondrial DNA that the Anunnaki did want to have happen. And the one with the most concentrated female mitochondrial DNA closest to the top was the one that had the crown next. That's how they decided. It was through bloodlines. And it was usually through the maternal blood. Well, it was through the maternal bloodline. Did the men rule? Yes. But then men ruled according to the maternal bloodline. And I do believe it was that rule that was passed down to Egypt that allowed, I think it was Hatshepsut, or I think it was Hatshepsut, the female pharaoh, to rule. And it was also that ordinance of inheritance and the female rule and some of that was passed on through the bloodlines that allowed for the daughters of Zelophehad decision to be made by Moses when the daughters of Zelophehad needed to keep their father's inheritance. there was a precedent set in law all the way back to, which is exactly where Abraham was called out of, and then we have the children of Israel as well. So let's see where we're at in this outline and see how well we're doing with it as we go forward. So there we go, we're hamming it up. Now, what did Ham have? Ham had a bad attitude. Ham had a bad disposition. Ham was wicked. And we know that Ham was wicked because of the way he treated his father. The way he the whole attitude about his father, how he made fun of him, uncovered his shame, did stupid stuff, disrespectful. And then Ham, you know, we went off and Cush and then eventually Nimrod. In the book of Joshua, we find out that the clothes that were from Adam and Eve were passed down to Noah, and Noah took them on the ark, and then Ham stole them, and he gave them to Nimrod. And it made him powerful. We can believe it, not believe it. It could be where Jason and the Magic Fleece myth comes from. They were seeking it. And we also find out when we get further along into history, into the timeline, that Jesus had a robe without a seam. These are things that are keep popping out in the overall story that continues to point to us looking at this so that we're not fooled in the future. So when we come back from the break, and we do have a break coming up right here, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about what happened while we were slaves. We're going to go ahead and go from Nimrod, do the short and skinny of it, right? And then we're going to talk about what happened while we were slaves and why it's true that there were Nephilim in the land in those days and even afterwards. And I think with this little bit of preface here and all this historical stuff of what the Anunnaki did and how they bred and how the mitochondrial DNA, the maternal mitochondrial DNA, took precedence in what they considered being strength and strong, we might want to take a look at that. Take a look at that. I am your host, Leanna Grace. I'm broadcasting live from the High Mountain Desert. This is Scriptures and Scuttlebutts here on Holistic Truth, broadcasting live from Blog Talk Radio, part of the Nazarene Network. That's a lot of stuff, but it's important to say. Now, coming up next week, we'll talk about that on the other side of the break, and then we'll get back into While We Were Slaves. But from the beginning of Genesis all the way to the end of Revelation, it is a continuous story. And if we are diligent and particular as we look through the historical myths, and I use the air quotes, I got my air quotes, myths, right? Then we might find that there is more agreeable truth with the Mahabharata than we might know. There may be more historical truth to the cuneiform and the mythos, what we've called mythos, than what we've been willing to admit, as well as those of the Greek gods, little G-O-Ds, and all the rest. Where did they come from? Well, there were some that were banished. We said last episode, and we're saying now, we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get back from the break. It's a story. It's continuous until Jesus comes, and then we're going to praise him. This is Michael O'Brien. It's a little bit of a longer one, but we're going to go ahead and listen to it because he's such an excellent musician, wonderful vocals, and a beautiful song. And the story goes on, and we'll be back.
Eyes and hope in his hands. I heard that he showed us a way and lit up the dark. I heard that his kingdom had come. Mothers and daughters, fathers and sons, and to all those who followed his voice, he changed every heart. It's not just on pages of history, it's not simply chiseled in stone, it's kept in the depth of the soul, and the story goes on, and it burns like a flame, through the years and the tears and the trials, the story goes on, and we carry his name, and it echoes across they wouldn't deny him. In pain or in death, his name always stayed on their lips, and has passed down to mine. So I'm following all those before me, and even long after I'm gone, the message of Christ will be heard, and the story goes on, and it burns like a flame, through the years and the tears and the trials. The story goes on, and we carry his name, and it echoes across the miles. We enter this life with a whimper and a cry. Sometimes we there's hope for the future, there's hope for the lost, there's always a soldier to carry the cross, cause the story is through, and the story is a change in this world, and the story goes on, and it burns like a flame, through the years and the tears and the trials.
Lies, we seek truth. Amid truth, we awaken. It's Leander Grace Out Loud, because your silence will not protect you. Oh, no, not at all. Welcome back here to Scriptures and Scuttlebutts here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Leander Grace, and the story goes on. The story goes on. Right, so we got it hamming it up to Nimrod, and Nimrod was doing his stuff, right? And we can go through we can name all of the ones, but basically up to Nimrod. And then what happened with Nimrod? Did we ever hear an end of Nimrod? Well, we hear the end of Nimrod in the book of Joshua. There was actually Esau that took Nimrod's life and the clothes. That he had. So when he actually met Jacob coming in from the field, from the hunt, he had just come in from killing Nimrod, and he didn't care anything about his, what you call it, because he had the clothes. And that seems to be the way that was unfolding in his mind, and he wanted it all. He wanted Nimrod's kingdom. He wanted God's kingdom. And I think that we can see that when we read through the scriptures and we put it all together, because it doesn't spell mom. It spells, ooh, he needs a spanking. That's what it spells to me. So now Nimrod's dead, and then we have all of the other stuff that's going on, and then Israel, and then in Egypt. So, you know, even Jacob came up and they took account. And in Book of Joshua, you find out that there was more than just Shechem, you know, and there's a little bit more to all of the battles that went on and why the fear of the Lord came upon the whole land because of the children of Israel who loved the Lord. They feared, the land feared the God of Israel. The land was filled with the fear God of Israel. That was amazing. And then what did they do? They up and sold their brother. And then the famine came, and then they came down to Egypt to get some food, and everybody got together, and big fat family reunion went on, big old happy slappy stuff. And then after Joseph's death, people started forgetting, and then the Hebrews became slaves. And there's a lot that goes on in the Book of Joshua that explains how it came about. It was very sly. It was very slick. It was over a period of time, not unlike the way we in the United States of America have become monetary slaves to the Federal Reserve. Same thing, just little steps over a period of time. So while we were slaves, and I say we because if you're a children of Israel and you're grafted in, then it's a we. It's our heritage too. We need to learn from it. So while we were slaves, what was going on outside of Egypt while we were inside of Egypt? Well, there was some propagating going on and some progenitation happening and some concentration of the mitochondrial DNA. And lo and behold, when they came out of Egypt and they went into the land of Canaan, there were giants in the land. It seems like even afterwards. And was it an infiltration or another alien invasion like the ancient aliens? No. This is concentration of the seed, same as the Hittites and all that, and all the. That's why the women were so prized. It was how close they were to the hierarchy that made them very prized, to the point where it didn't even matter what the men looked like. Truly, and you find that out in the Book of Joshua when you go to Pharaoh, how he got his name, and the Pharaoh that was in power when Joseph came up the steps was like, I think it was like two, he was only like 3 feet tall, he was like two, what's that, 18, two, anyway, the measurement was about, he was about 3 feet tall, and for what I understand, he was less than good looking, less than attractive, yeah. Poor guy. No wonder he needed this very fair, Hebrew, intelligent, tall, strapping young gentleman to be the front man, to run stuff. Right? So I'm just saying. So there was a lot of stuff that went on. And then after Joseph, some new folks stringed up, the inbreeding and crossbreeding and all of that, and new folks came in with a whole new mindset. And they saw how much, you know, they went to war at one point. The Book of Joshua explains that the reason that the Egyptians were so afraid of the children of Israel is because no matter what they did, they just kept growing in numbers, and they were powerful, meek, controlled strength. They were powerful because when they went out to fight enemies with the Egyptians, they nailed it. There wasn't any hope for the enemy. And then when they come back, they say, wow, what if they take sides with one of our enemies? And they started getting scared. And that's why slowly but surely they devised a plan to enslave the Hebrews. And it wasn't until Moses came and let my people free and all that. And they came out and they get in the land. And it's like, oh, my goodness, they've been busy while we were slaves. Right? And they got Og, you know, they got all of the different measurements of all of you. Feel free to go ahead and take a look at that through Numbers, through Joshua and Numbers and that. So does it go together? You'll have to decide. The Anunnaki, they didn't create us. They copied us. They tried to copy, and if they couldn't copy good, then they started doing all kinds of stupid stuff. And then we got lionhead men from Moab. We've got the Hittites that got goat feet. God didn't make that. The Nephilim corrupted it into that, and then the DNA stuck. How did they repopulate? Well, Ham. And they concentrated that DNA. Concentrated the DNA. They got several different strains going on, and then it became a competition. Not unlike what we're trying to do today with all the clones among us, cloning humans, It's going to come out. You'll find out we have been cloning humans for a long time. And it's not, you know, it's not right that they keep this from us. They're spending our money to do it. So this stuff is going to be coming out and we'll have that. So let's talk about this now. All of this goes on and then, you know, we know the biblical history. So here we are today. Are there any modern day descendant survivors? Well, yeah. There's quite a few, actually. We do know that there are giants. There are red-headed giants somewhere here in this particular realm and the land that is beyond what we have been allowed to know about, that is still part of us, that those who have been in hot air balloons have been able to see, and those who have been in airplanes have been able to see and not necessarily be able to share it on a world stage. And so they write books and we try to share it and then we're called nutty. Why are they keeping this from us? So one of the modern day descendants that I would say take a look at is the Rothschilds, otherwise known as the Red Shields. And I would take a look at, you know, Jacob Rothschild. His head is Nephilim. It's a Nephilim. It's been bred up, crossbred in, made sure that it stood, posing as my sister Judah, not part of the family. So this is how, this is not even as deep as it's going to go, but this is where we're at today. The same descendants of the Anunnaki and the Nephilim and all of that stuff and the fallen watchers, because the watchers were not the same as the fallen ones. The fallen watchers are different. And for those of you who have small children, when you open these books, I would suggest that you pre-read it ahead of time, especially the Book of Jubilees, because there's some stuff in there that'll give you a visual that you may not want your children to have. And it's some of the visual and some of the activities that the watchers performed in front of the innocent children of God, just enough to their minds. In fact, Jared is known to be saying that I've scarcely survived with my innocence, just because of what he was being shown. Understand that the job of the enemy is to corrupt the prize, and we are pawns of the enemy in the prize of our Creator. And the enemy is out prowling hard against our children. And I'm not just talking about our young children. I'm talking about our adult kids. I'm talking about all of us, the children of God. Wants to get us in a compromising position so that he can point. And it's a very easy trick to do. And he does it over and over and over again. And since he knows that he can't get past the blood of Christ, for those of us who trust God and love the Lord and accept Christ and understand what that means, those of us who have been washed in the blood, that he can at least give us a really hard time and try to make us ineffectual. And he does that by getting into our heads, Christians. He gets into our heads. And so what I have developed a habit of doing is when I know I'm having stuff that's not of God in my head, and I'm talking about yucky stuff, I'm talking about ugly thoughts about people, you know, having a bad attitude and having bad mental reactions, right? Somebody says something and in my mind I'm like, I don't want to be thinking like that. I don't want that to be an automatic gear or an automatic direction that my thoughts go into. That tells me that there's something not right inside that I need to look at. If people are getting on my nerves, there must be a reason, because it's very seldom has anything to do with them. And that's just free right there. You guys can have that for no charge. It's not copyright or nothing. I probably heard somebody else say it. So this is where we're at, and this is what we're fighting against. Now understand that when we're talking about the Mahabharata, the Vedas and the Vestas, and all of those books that are written from India and from China as well, understand that that while these things were happening with hamming it up to Nimrod, and while we were slaves in Egypt, and while we were battling the giants that had come back into the land of Canaan, and when we finally got the guts to come back and do that battle, and trusted God enough that He was going to win it for us, then we were able to overcome it. The giants were nothing in God's eyes, right? So did any of those survive? Well, yeah, we know they did. We know they did. And some of them probably survived 536. And some of them probably survived, you name it. Because we know that a remnant of God's always survives, right? God keeps the holy remnant alive. He keeps that bloodline remnant alive. And so does the enemy. So do the watchers. But here's something that was pointed out to me. I was in prayer about this with Holy Spirit. And He brought a text in front of me, and I started reading it, and I was like, you know what, this makes sense. You know, we talk in Protestant religion about the falling away, and we make an assumption because we're so self-centered, and it is the way that it's presented, that it's the falling away of the church. But what is pointed out to me, and I'm going to go ahead and bring the text up here so I can give you a place to go reference it, and you're not just listening to some words. And this is actually, make sure I know what page I'm on so I can get back to it here. That's page 9. Okay, so back up here to the title. The title of the text is called The Man of Sin in 2 Thessalonians. And this is written by Reverend Professor Doctor, and you got all them titles, Francis Nigel Lee, and he's the professor of systematic theology, and then we have Caldwell Morrow lecturer in church history, and so he does both of those, and he's from Queensland Presbyterian Theological College in Brisbane, Australia, and this is his work as of 2000, so this is in the year of 2000. And let me see if we can go down here to page 9. There's a lot of good stuff in it. Let me go down here to page 9 where I was and bring this to you. And he talks about the falling away, but he talks about, he discusses it in a different way, from a different perspective. He talks about the falling away as those, the Jews, the Judaists is what he calls them, the Judaists. Okay, is the falling away of the Judaists from Judaism into Christianity. So here says, he says, second, let me see what the first is so that we can do it that way. Who wants to start in the middle, right? First, this man of sin, he says, or lawlessness, was already embryonically present while Paul was writing to the Thessalonians in 51 AD. So we know the time of this writing. For, wrote Paul, even then, the secret of evil, alias the mystery of lawlessness, already keeps on working. Indeed, Paul had already told the Thessalonians about these things when he was previously with them in AD 49. Okay, then he comes back and it says, as the antinomian human head of the pagan Roman Empire that was still spreading out during the first century AD, that's who he'd identified as the man of sin. And was it a particular individual? It was the head of whoever fills that spot. Remember, when God's talking about horns, he's not always talking about people. He's talking about kingdoms. He's talking about powers. He's talking about the power of authority. Right, the horn is the power of authority. The four horns, we'll get to that in another time. So he says it had indeed been the unbelieving apostates or the fallen away Thessalonian Judaists who had initially stirred up the thug element among the unbelieving Thessalonian Gentiles against Jason and his fellow believers. So this is what this is what this professor is saying that Paul was talking about, is the falling away of the wicked generation. They're falling away. I invite you to read it now. Second, he says, this already present man of sin would only begin to persecute the Thessalonian Christians in earnest after another equally well-known power had been removed, the factor of fallen away, in quotes, or apostate Judaism. It was apostate Judaism which held back the full unveiling of the man of sin in his first phases. And then he goes on, for that man of sin would not be unveiled fully until the apostate Judaism was first out of the way, removed from Jerusalem temple precincts, and indeed thereafter threatened with deprival of its status as a permitted religion, right? And it was going to be religio licita throughout the Roman Empire. So it's like if they didn't go along with this, they just didn't keep quiet, and then they would lose their place as an approved religion. Well, that happened anyway, and then it was reinstated later on, and that's when the Rothschilds and the like got in on it, because Judaism really hadn't survived, from what we understand, what Josephus was trying to explain to us. I'm making a bold statement. I know that I am, and Judah is my sister, and everyone knows how I feel about that. So I'm got to speak this truth even when my voice shakes. And then also with the Protestant religions and the Christians, we're looking for this man of sin to rise up now, and what we have been dead to and been blind to and not willing to take a look at is he's been running it for a while behind the scenes, and the churches have become his daughters. Her daughters. We have to see this. We have to see this. And so, pagan Roman, did it have a wounded? It sure did. It was wounded. The Roman papacy, the power of the Roman emperor, the Roman Empire, went yada, and then. We find out in the 4th century, in 365, Constantine, he says, by this you will conquer. Does that mean that he was blessed by God? No, he doesn't ever say that. But he did take the symbol and conquer the very religion of which it symbolizes. The very people that held that up are the very people that he conquered with it. He changed the laws and the times and the seasons. Sunday worship. It's their rule, not God's. It's Constantine's rule, not God's. And if we've learned anything from all of this collection of the Holy Scriptures, is we really don't need to fudge on this. We really don't need to fudge on this. We don't need to argue about it. But those who hear what I'm saying and understand the message of this about us keeping Sabbath, because we're all going to come back to that anyway. That's what's established. That's what's always been established. It's not ever changed. And we find out in the end of the book that that's what remains established. The Sabbath command is where God's authority is. We want his authority. We need to recognize his authority, not the authority of the Catholic Church, because it has no authority in and of itself. It just does not, especially with Sunday worship or Sunday, calling Sunday the Sabbath. So there you have that. I have a lot of friends. And they each have a little bit of wherever it is that they decide to worship. We all get along just fine. We still have to understand where the corruption is and how it is that the bloodlines are able to propagate. Because who is it that who keeps the papacy's money? None other than the Red Shields, the Rothschilds, who are not of Judah. They are not my sister. They infiltrated. They barely look human. But they do try to pass. So we're going to have to get real about it. And where does the crown fit in? Where did the crown serve? The crown served the papacy. It did not stand on From what I understand, to even now, unless it's changed, the crown pays the papacy a tax just so it can use the crown. Who's been in the crown? We're going to have to take a look at that probably on Holistic Truth when we get deeper into some of this historical data that we really need to take a look at so that we can understand the world at large, the players that are still here, still playing the same game against us. And the other night I brought up Nero's wife and I couldn't remember what it was. And then I said something about Poppin. Well, her name was Papino. So there you have that. brought it right to my memory, whether I knew it or not. Let me go and clear my throat. I'm looking at the clock too, and it is looking like it's time for a break. We have a 90-minute program tonight. We've got a lot of information to put out. And I also wanted to leave a little bit of time extra in case somebody also wanted to call in on topic about these scriptures, information, sauce for the goose, stuff of that nature. But it's not call-ins for seeking any kind of guidance. That's going to be limited simply to Mondays and Mondays alone going forward. So this is a lot of information, a lot of stuff to take in, a lot of rearranging of our thoughts and things that we were taught that might not have been true, things that we were led to believe that we didn't question, because who would think that those who are teaching us would be teaching us something that's untrue, right? Who would think that people would purposely try to mislead us in an official capacity? That's just not a normal to have those kinds of suspicions, although we find ourselves needing to have more of those every day, right? We need to be skeptical listeners. I am your host, Leanna Grace. We're broadcasting live from the High Mountain Desert. We're going to go ahead and go into another little break here. I'm looking through the scrolls and see what it is that we have. Did I fail to upload it? I don't think that I uploaded. I really did want to, but I didn't. And so we'll go forward with something else. You know, let's go ahead with turning everything over to God and knowing where we're at. This is a little bit rougher than you know what? It's not even rough. This is pushing. This is hardcore. And this is pumping. And this lady here has some pipes. So I'm going to go ahead and bring this song. Is God, We Need You Now, and it's by Caitlin and Curtis, and we're going to go ahead and play it. It's a little longer than four, but that's okay. There's a lot to digest, and the song's true. God, We Need You Now, and we'll be back on the other side.
Crazy baby, chill, don't medicate, just meditate. You waking up now, well babe, you hella late. Educate, look at what's going on, let it resonate, accelerate. Find your inner hunger like you never ate. Agenda is to push the hate, separate and segregate. Don't celebrate quite yet, the storm is coming, cue for heaven's sake. Violence that they demonstrate, instigate and penetrate. The values of our country and our God is what they desecrate. My fighters ain't no featherweight, pulling out the seams of the fabric that they fabricate. They see this lies, manipulate, intimidate through fear and force, forcing us to sit and wait. Till we come together, congregate, and then we liberate. Praying that you give me strength to find some love amongst the hate. Marching on these streets of blood, till I see the golden gate. Troubadour and troubled souls, one of God's servants. Blaze out, cut the grass, till we see the surface.
One day, I hope you see the truth. This puppet show stays on because of you.
just digest it. Suspected something's going on, but chose to just neglect it. Deflected by some breaking news, oh, we just accept it. Expected just to fall in line and follow their perspective. Don't question their objective, but I got a lot of questions. How these kids molested, but nobody's been arrested. Read it in the testament, these children are protected. So I'm fighting all these terrorists, both foreign and domestic. Refuse to be directed, blind, not a sheep. Only kneel to my God, so I'm dying on my feet. Silence when we speak, but there's violence in the street. I've been rolling with the punches, I can't take it on the cheek. Drink from a glass half full, I'm optimistic. People are sadistic, so vicious and malicious. Praying for assistance to overcome opposition. Or I'm gonna start resisting and then I'll pray for forgiveness.
This puppet show stays on because of you.
Lies, we seek truth. Amid truth, we awaken. It's Leander Grace Out Loud, because your silence will not protect you. Oh, welcome back to the third portion, third 30-minute section of the program. Anyway, welcome back from the break. I am your host, Leander Grace. We're still broadcasting live from the High Mountain. Isn't that a wonderful song? God, we need you now, and do we not? We need him now more than ever. We need him to work on our behalf, because what we're up against and what we're fighting is the same enemy that our forefathers fought, the same enemy that the patriarchs fought. The same thing is, while they were slaves, they reproduced, propagated, did all that. There's been a long time and a lot of technology that they've used and have hidden from us. We know that there are cross-hybrid species that are being created. Some of them have been discovered. We know this. We have the evidence. That's why we know this. We have the documentary evidence. We have video evidence. We have quite a bit. Who's we? Those of us who collect it. That's good enough. And the enemy knows that it is, you know, here's the really cool thing. Just as in the Holy Scriptures, the message of Christ from the very beginning to the very end of the book is sprinkled throughout. The whole truth of Christ is through the whole Scriptures, throughout the Scriptures. So you can't interrupt the message. It's an integrated messaging system, and it accounts for interruption, noise, interference, all of the stuff. It accounts for it. The very same way that a network, a computer network, propagates information and accounts for signal degradation and integration and all of that. So just as there is a security in the scriptures being spread out, okay, and there's a whole network thing that's called signal spread and different stuff like that. But when you have your data on a server, you also want to have at least two copies, one off-site, you know, and one on-site, one at least one on off-site, so that if your data blows up, you have backups to go to. And I think there's enough digital soldiers around the world and across the face of the earth that have enough copies of all the stuff that there is no way that the bad guys are going to get to destroy the evidence this time. It has propagated itself across the face of the earth, just like servers propagate their information across multiple domains and across multiple regions and all the master data centers. It's the same way with the digital soldiers that are offline, patriots that archive offline. There's enough data backup that it doesn't matter if the Library of Alexandria blows up. We've got backup. And I'm using that as a metaphor, right? Because I'm sure the library was emptied out before it was burnt. I'm just saying, I have a hunch. So we brought a lot of data today. We brought a lot of information, a lot of historical stuff, and tried to tie some of the historical things together. Understand, China was going through its stuff at the same time, and we can look back through its manuscripts, and there is there's an agreement in the timeline of what was going on according to the canonized scriptures during this timeline, and Jubilees and Enoch and Joshua and all the rest, as well as the historical scriptures, or the scriptures that were written during over in China. And what was going on there, the same as what was going over in Greek, and the same things were occurring. They were documented perhaps a little differently, maybe spins on a theme, but we can recognize it as existing through history. And we know this. And enough information was given in the scriptures that if we want to, we can dig at it. Why do we need to dig? Because not everybody can do that. We have to dive into the waves of the scriptures, knowing what is that? Charlie can't swim. The Nephilim can't swim. The darkness can't swim in the scriptures like we can. They can't go in and make the same connections that we can make intuitively as Holy Spirit guides us. Which is another reason why when we're doing this work, we stay in prayer and we stay spiritually fit, knowing that we will come under attack from time to time. And we have to be aware of that. And this is my favorite defense against attack. When I know that it's an attack and not just a wayward CME or something like that, but when I know that a concentrated attack, either etheric, spiritual, mental, emotional, you pick a front, right? Pick a battlefield. The simple phrase makes it go away every single time. Get thee behind me, Satan. Your ways are not my Father's ways. And you would be surprised how quickly your thoughts clear, your heartbeat starts to go back to normal. Not that you have an arrhythmia or dysrhythmia or any other ismias, but you will feel your heart area relax, the energetic centers around the center of your heart area. And then the shoulders can let down, and then your breathing can start returning. And then the anxiety, then the thinking starts returning, and they go to prayer immediately. And what I find myself doing is giggling. You know, I end up just giggling, getting on my knees and giggling to God, because it's like, boy, I almost fell for that one, huh? Right? And just kind of give it to God there. And because there's a lot of interference, sonic interference, you know, just like Batty Coda said, sonic interference, man, right? Just like that. Some of it comes from 5G. Some of it comes from intentional stuff. Some of it comes from overhead interference. And there's a lot of folks targeting, especially Christian believers, that have an active VMAT2 gene. Let me get a drink. And for those of you who don't know what an active VMAT2 gene is, that is the gene, according to Bill Gates, and the briefing that he gave to the DOD, is that the VMAT2 gene is the gene that activates certain areas. It's predisposition to have certain areas activated when scriptures and divinity things are talked about and read. So evidently, you know, they can see us. They can, what, Leanna Grace? They can see us. When we're glowing brightly on a certain frequency, this is going to kind of bake some noodles, especially some of the Protestant Christian noodles. You know, when we are in prayer, and when we are in praise, and when we are feeling that love of God in our heart, we set out a frequency of love, of humility, usually, and that fills under the dome. So we send out a frequency. That is the frequency that cannot be stopped because it comes from God through us. That is the frequency that the adversary wants to stop. That's Psalm 19. Psalm 19. And for those who read it and are a bit perplexed as to what exactly they're talking about when they're talking about circuits and non-voices and stuff like that, what I recommend is go to BibleGateway.com and read Psalm 19 from the version of the Complete Hebrew, or Complete Jewish Bible. And it's a more direct translation. It's more relaxed. It's not the same rhythm as the King James, but the words are explained much better. Now, there are some things in the King James Bible that just aren't translated the way they need to. Why? Because the adversary, those who have gotten in and changed a little bit here and a little there, little, just as God wrote online here, there, a little, there, a little. All right, for us, the adversary, in their attempt to change the scriptures and hide some of the truth from us, have changed things a little here and a little there. So I suggest it might be extremely edifying to read the Complete Jewish Bible version of the scriptures, and you will find out that what we've been saying on the program, and Psalm 19 is exactly where I learned it, is God is constantly telling us the truth. We have to listen. A lot of things are getting in the way, and the adversary loves to run sonic interference. You know, things like, well, ULS, ultra low frequencies, and things of that, you know, extremely low frequencies, things that affect our nervous system that may not be necessarily detectable by the eyes and the ears, and may not even be sensed by the skin, but can definitely have an affect and an effect on our nervous system. We've seen this happen several times, some of you who are keeping up with it, and with interference of the newscasters and stuff like that, where they just seem to go talking into aphasic gobbledygook. So there's a lot for us to learn about how it is that talks to us if we haven't considered it and looked into it deeply. And in Psalm 19, it says that he built a tabernacle in the sun. And so the CMEs that are coming out, Psalm 19, is full not just of light and photons, but full of data. Full of what? The Antichrist data. If you can think for just a moment, if you can imagine for just a moment, knowing that we are bags of mostly water and we run on electromagnetic biochemical charge, just like a battery, we've got electrolytes and we've got a chemical charge. And we need to constantly feed that body so that chemical charge can keep going on. Well, light affects us. We know light affects us. We're just now learning about the different frequencies of ultraviolet light, the different frequencies of infrared. Some of it, the infrared healing frequencies, light that we cannot see, ultraviolet, we know it exists. What effect does it have on us? UV, sometimes it burns our skin, so it has an effect and an affect. So these frequencies are getting to us, and we know they're getting through us. So what are they doing? what is the data coming from the sun that is documented in Psalm 19? What does it do? It helps our DNA heal. It does what, Leandra? It helps our DNA heal. It helps it to begin healing back to, that's H-E-A-L-I-N-G, back to where it was before it became so corrupted that we couldn't hear God. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's what God does with the sun. Is God in the sun? No, he set up a tabernacle in the sun. It's all right there in Psalm 19. Talks about it. It might make you scratch your head a little bit, but understand that it's documentation of the things that we're trying to tell you, that God uses light to heal us. And it's the same basis that the orme, the orbitally rearranged molecular elements, mono, yeah, that's the big old word. They're monoatomic elements where the monoatomic orbit has been rearranged into a trace elements. And it's not just gold, it's also iridium and platinum and a lot of other things. And we may or may not be able to get into the details of that in some of the other broadcasts. It just depends on how far the Father wants me to go down this little hole right here of explaining some of the technical things of how our body receives information and upgrades nearly like a computer. How do you think God talks to us? Well, it says in Psalm 19, but the voice is not heard. Well, how are we going to hear something? How's it going to be a voice that's not heard? Psalm 19. Then it goes on and talks about God and the truth of God. In fact, you know what? We have time. We have plenty of time. I'm going to see about pulling it up on, yeah, I can do that. We can pull it up right here and read a little bit. Bible Gateway, pardon me, it's a loud keyboard. It's old and clunky because it works. Why replace it, right? So complete Jewish Bible, and we're going to go to Psalm 19. So here it is. It says, the heavens declare the glory of God. The dome of the sky speaks the work of his hands. Every day it utters speech. Every night it reveals knowledge. Without speech, without a word, without their voices being heard, their line goes out through all the earth and their words to the end of the world. In them he places a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom from the bridal chamber with delight, like an athlete to run his race. It rises at one side of the sky, circles around to the other side, and nothing escapes its heat. Verse 8, the Torah of Adonai is perfect, restoring the inner person. The instruction of Adonai is sure, making wise the thoughtless and the throat. Precepts of Adonai are right, rejoicing the heart. The mitzvah of Adonai is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of Adonai is clean, enduring forever. The rulings of Adonai are true. They are righteous altogether, more desirable than gold, than much fine gold, also sweeter than honey or drippings from the honeycomb. Through them, your servant is warned. In obeying them, there is great reward. Who can discern unintentional sins? Cleanse me from hidden faults. Also, keep your servant from presumptuous sins so that they won't control me. Then I will be blameless and free of great offense. May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of my heart be acceptable in your presence, Adonai, my rock and my Redeemer. So that is Psalm 19. And it talks about how God talks to us. And it talks about the law. And it talks about how the Torah, how it changes the inner person. The Torah of Adonai is perfect, restoring the inner person. And it's coming out like a bridegroom from the bridal chamber with delight, like an athlete to run his race, trying to get that healing stuff to us. Does it of this and decide for yourself. One of my favorite portions is where it says, the rulings of Adonai are true. They are righteous altogether, more desirable than gold, than much fine gold. Now, when we go back to the King James Version, and it's very much fun at the King James Version as well, when we get down to the part where it talks about the gold, let me come down here to KJV, kaboom, kaboom. And we do the search. I love the BibleGateway.com for getting multiple, a wide array of different things. So here it is at the King James Version. And what this says is in verse 9, so Psalm 19:9, the fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether, more to be desired than are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey on the honeycomb. Now understand that we have talked about before this orme is made out of fine gold. Orme is made out of these orbitally rearranged monoatomic elements. Oh, I got it right the first time. Are created by, just as Moses did back in Exodus when they exited and came down from the mountain, he ground that stuff into powder. He created orme, and he threw it on the water, and he made the children of Israel drink it. It's like, snap out of it. You guys are not even thinking. So the fear of the Lord is more desirable than even that, which the Anunnaki were producing to prolong their life, because they were no longer, or they were trying to prolong the life of their offspring. They say, well, Anna Grace, what do you mean trying to prolong the life of their offspring? Well, what the Book of Enoch tells us is that they pled their case to Enoch because they couldn't be in the presence of God anymore. So they pled their case to Enoch to go plead to God to say, don't punish us severely. We're sorry that we ruined your creation. Is the layout of that, right? And God said, well, y'all are wrong on so many levels. And you thought that you were going to have children that were going to live forever, but no, your children are going to live to only be about 500 years old, and they're going to destroy each other before your eyes so you can mourn the loss of them forever. And then we find out in the Vedas and the Vestas and all throughout history that there were great big battles. And they destroyed each other from off the face of the earth, some before the flood. They did it before, just as the scriptures tell us, just as the Book of Enoch says. That's exactly what's documented in the other ancient manuscripts written in stone throughout the other continents across the face of the earth. So why were they making the ormus? They wanted their children to live longer than they were going to be able to live. Created some other that added human blood to it, and that's a completely different story, but it does tie into very much the adrenochrome use that's going on with the satanic cult worshipers on the world stage today. It is the same lineage doing the same thing in the same way. And here we are, just as blind now as we were then. In fact, you know what? I thank God that we were so innocent that we could not imagine this level of wickedness going on right under our noses. So on the one hand, we can berate ourselves and say, oh, we were so foolish, we were so blind, we were so this, we were so that. But also there is that other option to claim and say, we were so innocent. Who would have ever have imagined that this stuff was going on? It is not right to think about this stuff. It's not right for it to even enter into the psyche or the consciousness. That's innocence. It's not just naivete. That's innocence. And now, because we must bust them and we must bring them out, we must educate people, some of our innocence might be sacrificed for a little while during the education process. the intensive education process when the documentaries are, the real documentaries are released. So we need to prepare ourselves mentally and spiritually and emotionally and find ourselves surrounded by, the word I like is decent people. That has nothing to do with being straight, gay, or otherwise. It has everything to do with being decent. And I know I'm expected to say something about Pride Month, and it's like, why? Pride comes before the fall. Somebody else said that earlier on a broadcast. We already know that. You call something pride, then you know that you're already being fooled into believing something that's not true. Take pride in this, and then become full of debauchery, but take pride in it. And so there's a big difference in having same-gendered relationships and having a display of absolute debauchery and a wickedness and an involvement of children, because it's not normal. Is it horrendous? Is it something that's a salvific issue? No, it's not a salvific issue. By grace are we saved through faith, not by our heterosexuality or homosexuality or anything that we can or cannot do. It is a gift from God, lest any man should boast because they're straight, because they're gay, because they're this, because they're that. But we know what's healthy and not healthy. We know what's decent and indecent. We just have to decide whether we're going to enforce those things and or allow people to run half naked and acting like idiots in the street. There's already laws against it. We shouldn't have a special month to allow everybody to act like an idiot in the street. And that's all that it is. And our kids don't need to see it. And I'm tired of seeing it. I don't need to see anybody's junk. Keep your junk to yourself. Keep your junk. And that's all it is. Acting like five-year-olds with everything hanging out. Look at me. Look at me. It's exhibitionism in the extreme. And something that was civil rights oriented has now become very uncivil and very indecent. And I don't know who would want to be a part of it. Straight, gay, or otherwise. It's just not decent. There you have it. We talked about a lot. We covered a lot of stuff, a lot of historical things. Some of it's a little hysterical. Some of it's just downright, really? Huh? Right? It's like, really? And the answer is yes. Yes. Really. All of this together. Remember in Daniel when he said one of the watchers and one of the holy ones. So the watchers became known for having been fallen and having called it the watcher. We know that it was one of the fallen ones and they were having a discussion back and forth. Is that how we know it? Is that what we saw when we talked to Daniel? We're going to take a look at that next week when we come back, because we're also want to mention, so you can do a little, we got a little bit of time left. You know, also wanted to mention that in Daniel, he was told to seal up the vision for the time is for a very future time. But yet John was told to not seal up the vision because the time is at hand. I just thought I'd throw that in there. Give you something a little more to ponder and maybe a little bit of homework also as we go forward. I am your host, Leanna Grace. It's been my honor to bring you the broadcast this evening. Remember that it is the glory of God to conceal a matter, and it is the honor of kings to search it out. And we'll continue to search these things out going forward until God says stop. I am your host, Leanna Grace, broadcasting live from the high mountain desert. Hope you found value in tonight's broadcast or podcast by people we love you too. And I'm reminding you this Sabbath night, as always, to watch for those signposts, to connect these dots, to find your path, to live in love, do something good, because we're going to be forgiven. And so, next time, good night.